Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg on how Edward Snowden's revelations may land the NSA at the Supreme Court and how the Affordable Care Act might wind up there again. Nina, in just a minute. Also today, should the city of New York discourage driving or try to make it as pleasant as possible? Dave Isay today with tales from StoryCorps about strangers influencing your life. And we're collecting your Lou Reed moments. Post your remembrances of a Lou Reed song or how the iconic New York rocker affected you in general or even about meeting him. If you ever did, go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show or our Facebook page. We'll take some Lou Reed moments on the air, too, later in the show. But first, as revelations of mass U.S. phone call monitoring continue to shock Europe, the first indication has come recently that the secrets that Edward Snowden's leaked documents are revealing could wind up in a Supreme Court case on the constitutionality of the surveillance programs. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg joins us to talk about that and some other Supremes-related news. Hi, Nina. Thanks a lot for coming on WNYC today. We really appreciate it.
Happy to be here, and I hope all the folks out there pick up the phone or go over to their iPhone and make a contribution. I have a family history to WNYC. My dad, I don't know, many decades ago, used to play live chamber music on WNYC. So
wow.
I hope everybody does contribute.
Thank you for that. And now that WQXR is part of our family, there's more live chamber music on WNYC
right.
than ever before. And listeners,
right.
we can take a few phone calls, a rare opportunity to ask Nina Totenberg something about the Supreme Court, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. So, Nina, I'm looking at this AP report from yesterday, which says, for the first time, the Justice Department will use information gained from one of the warrantless surveillance programs to prosecute a terrorist, setting the stage for a likely Supreme Court test of the program. Can you tell us about the case against Jamshid Mutharov?
Well, the case itself is not particularly important, and it doesn't actually stem from the Edward Snowden revelations. What happened is this. The ACLU challenged the 2008 amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. And that case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that the ACLU's clients, which were Amnesty International and journalists and other human rights workers, that they didn't have legal standing to challenge those amendments because they couldn't prove that they were surveilled. Certainly, that they had essentially their case was based on a fear of spying, and that they had no concrete evidence that they actually were that their voices were picked up or their emails were intercepted.
Right. So these were journalists and lawyers, among others,
right.
and they weren't challenging it on, say, ideological or policy grounds. They were claiming that they had fears that they themselves would be surveilled.
And they had a very strong, they thought there was a very strong likelihood since they contact people overseas who might be the subject of surveillance.
Uh-huh.
And therefore their messages would be intercepted. So the Supreme Court made that ruling. In the course of that, the Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, was asked at the Supreme Court argument, well, if these people who are contacting clients, for example, who are the subject of surveillance, if they can't bring a challenge, who can? And Mr. Verrilli said, well, somebody who is the subject of a criminal prosecution would have the right to know that his messages have been intercepted. And when he said that, he thought that was true. And then in June of that year, he read in the New York Times that the Justice Department's different section, the National Security Section, trial lawyers were refusing to give this information to people who were the subject mm-hmm. of a criminal prosecution, to tell their lawyers whether or not their voices had ever been picked up on a surveillance. And Verrilli had a fit. And there was an internal debate in the Justice Department, and the lawyers for all of the intelligence agencies came in. They had a sit down. And in the end, the lawyers for the intelligence agencies actually agreed that the law did require that people be notified when they are the subject of criminal prosecution.
Wow.
And so that means not that they use the evidence from that has been obtained. Let's say I, Nina Totenberg, my voice is picked up. I'm calling some accused terrorist in Afghanistan, and I reach him on the phone. And then later they find out, and they hear me because they're watching this terrorist, and my voice comes in, and they say, why is she calling him? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Are there any other people she's called and that she's emailed with? And they find out that I have a long history, let's say. They then find out there are other reasons to worry about me. Then they go and they get a real warrant. All of that was unwarranted. Now they get to go to court and they get a warrant. They say, we have now done an independent investigation and we have probable cause to believe that we should be surveilling her. And they get the warrant. They can get it either under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, a warrant, or they can get it under the regular criminal statute if they think that's okay to do that. And they conduct a surveillance of me, and they find out that I'm plotting to blow up the Brooklyn Bridge, let's say. And they prosecute me for that. And they use the evidence that they obtained in the warrant. And now they also have to notify my lawyers that they originally got my name from
the warrantless,
the unwarranted
surveillance.
Right.
So enter,
that's what they have to do now.
So enter Mr. Mutarov, who the FBI investigated after his communications with an overseas website administrator for a group called the Islamic Jihad Union, whose internet use was actually spied on without a warrant, I gather, and then he was investigated in that kind of scenario you were laying out and charged with a crime. Does that mean that the FBI first became suspicious of him by noticing his communication in a blanket surveillance program, and therefore that whole program can now be challenged at the Supreme Court?
Probably. Well, the warrantless surveillance program can be, presumably. They have set this case up to go to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
It is not probably likely that he was not the original target in all likelihood because he was here. And if you're in the United States, they have to get a warrant when you're in the United States. So they picked him up. They picked up his they didn't spy upon him originally. They captured him. They captured his messages incidentally.
Yes.
And that may have led to getting a warrant and conducting a surveillance of them. And what the government will argue in his trial, undoubtedly, is we didn't use any evidence that we obtained without a warrant. And the fruit of the poison tree is not the case here because he wasn't the target. We incidentally found him,
mm-hmm.
and then we went after him after that. And I think the likelihood is that the lower courts may buy that argument, but then the whole thing will go to the Supreme Court.
And would Snowden's revelations, which, as you say, came after this guy was arrested, play a role?
I don't actually think so. Not in this case, no. I actually do not think so. This case was, what happened here was that the Solicitor General told the Supreme Court something that he believed to be true at the time, but was not. The lawyers in the National Security Division, who had actually sat in on his practice sessions, didn't tell him that those assurances he was planning to give the Supreme Court were not true.
Mm.
And so he went ahead and gave them, and that's a... You're not supposed to, you have to essentially fess up. You can't you can't be misleading the Supreme Court of the United States. But I didn't really have much to do with Edward Snowden.
Yeah, interesting.
This would have happened anyway.
Let's turn to the Affordable Care Act, and my guest is NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. As most of the attention about the law is focused on its extremely buggy website rollout, The Supreme Court will soon decide whether to hear another constitutional challenge, this time about the requirement that all policies include contraception coverage. This is a religious freedom case?
Right. There are, you know, normally laws apply across the board if they in the United States, and there's actually a fairly famous Supreme Court case in which Justice Scalia wrote that if you treat everybody equally the same way, then you, if it incidentally harms some religion, you don't have a beef about that. This is a case, though, that involves a challenge to the Affordable Care Act, because under the Affordable Care Act, every for-profit organization or business has to not pay for, but at least provide an avenue for people to get contraceptives. And a number of businesses that are headed by people of religious faith who don't agree with contraception have challenged that, saying it's a violation of their religious, their freedom of religion. And these are some of them very large organizations with more than 10,000 employees.
Wow.
So it'll be a very interesting. I mean, everybody does expect the Supreme Court to agree to review this later, probably in 2014. We'll hear the cases. But so these are not small businesses, because I think they would if they were very small, they wouldn't even be required to provide insurance.
Right, under 50 people. So one question that I have about this is, whose religious freedom does the Constitution protect in this case? The employer, who may believe condom use is a crime against God or something, or the woman who may not? Is that even a talking point in the case?
Oh, I'm sure it's a talking point. Everything's a talking point. This should be a very interesting case. And of course, you know, you can spin out all kinds of hypotheticals in your head on either side that make it a very hard case. On the one hand, you could say, well, supposing you were a kosher butcher, and not a small butcher, a kosher meat processor, would you have to, you can come up with a hypothetical that would make some regulation be inimical to the kosher meat packer. But you can also come up with other hypotheticals, which are, supposing you're a drugstore chain, a large drugstore chain, and you don't want to provide contraceptives to women, or some other medicine that you may think is wrong. So it's just this is not just simple.
And oddly enough, and we just have 30 seconds left, but I see Citizens United might be used as a precedent for this Obamacare religious freedom case. I thought Citizens United is a campaign finance ruling.
Well, it is, but it does. The idea is that they said that corporations have a right of free speech. Now, that's a different sort of view of corporate entities than this one, and we'll see. You know, I'm sure that, like I said, everything is arguable in the Supreme Court, and I'm sure that those who are challenging this regulation will say, well, you know, if we have free speech, why do we have to do something we don't believe in and under the religion clause of the Constitution?
All right. So the Affordable Care Act and the NSA warrantless surveillance programs possibly likely heading to the U.S. Supreme Court. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg, thanks so much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.